He slowed down, just enough so that he could run up the steps without falling on his face. And then he wrenched the door open, wide, wider, barely hearing the slam as it crashed into the outer wall. Maybe he should have paused for breath. Maybe he should have entered quietly, giving himself a moment to assess the situation, to gauge how far along they were. The church went silent. The priest stopped his drone, and every spine in every pew twisted until every face was turned to the back. To him. "Don't!" Gregory gasped, but he was so short of breath he could barely hear the word. "Don't!" he said louder this time, clutching the edge of the pews as he staggered forward. "Don't do it!" She said nothing, but he saw her. He saw her mouth open with shock. He saw her bouquet slip from her hands, and he knew, by God he knew, that she'd stopped breathing. She looked so beautiful. Her golden hair seemed to catch the light, and it shone with a radiance that filled him with strength. He straightened, still breathing hard, but he could walk unassisted now, and he let go of the pew. "Don't do it," he said again, moving toward her with the stealthy grace of a man who knows what he wants, who knows what should be. Still, she didn't speak. No one did. It was strange that 300 of London's biggest busybodies gathered into one building, and no one could utter a word. No one could take his eyes off him as he walked down the aisle. "I love you," he said, right there, right in front of everyone. Who cared? He would not keep this a secret. He would not let her marry someone else without making sure all the world knew that she owned his heart. "I love you," he said again, and out of the corner of his eye, he could see his mother and sister seated primly in a pew, their mouths open with shock. He kept walking, down the aisle, each step more confident, more sure. "Don't do it," he said, stepping out of the aisle and into the apse. "Don't marry him."
"Gregory," she whispered, "why are you doing this?"
"I love you," he said, because it was the only thing to say. It was the only thing that mattered. Her eyes glistened, and he could see her breath catch in her throat. She looked up at the man she was trying to marry. His brows rose as he gave her a tiny one-shouldered shrug, as if to say, "It's your choice." Gregory sank to one knee. "Marry me," he said, his very soul in his words. "Marry me." He stopped breathing. The entire church stopped breathing. She brought her eyes to his. They were huge and clear, and everything he'd ever thought was good and kind and true. "Marry me," he whispered one last time. Her lips were trembling, but her voice was clear when she said, Chapter 1, in which our hero falls in love. 2 months earlier. Unlike most men of his acquaintance, Gregory Bridgerton believed in true love. He'd have to be a fool not to. Consider the following. His eldest brother, Anthony. His eldest sister, Daphne. His other two brothers, Benedict and Colin, not to mention his sisters, Eloise, Francesca, and, galling but true, Hyacinth. All of whom were quite happily besotted with their spouses. For most men, such a state of affairs would produce nothing quite so much as bile, but for Gregory, who had been born with an uncommonly cheerful, if occasionally, according to his younger sister, annoying spirit, it simply meant that he had no choice but to believe the obvious. Love existed. It was not a wispy figment of the imagination, designed to keep the poets from complete starvation. It might not be something that one could see or smell or touch, but it was out there, and it was only a matter of time before he, too, found the woman of his dreams and settled down to be fruitful, multiply, and take on such baffling hobbies as papier-mâché and the collection of nutmeg graters. Although, if one wanted to put a fine point on it, which did seem rather precise for such an abstract sort of concept, his dreams didn't exactly include a woman.